welcome to episode 8 of Software Security Gurus with Matthias Madu. In this interview, he chats with Guy Pajani, co-founder and president at Sneak Security. They discuss scanning tools and the rise of the developer in security programs. He also reveals his experiences in startup and what he looks for in a great company. If you'd like to leave your thoughts on this interview or ask our gurus a question, visit softwaresecuritygurus.com or leave us a voice message by visiting anchor.fm/softwaresecuritygurus.
Welcome to the Software Security Gurus webcast. I'm your host, Matthias Madu, CTO and co-founder of Secure Code Warrior. This webcast is co-sponsored by Secure Code Warrior. For more information, see www.softwaresecuritygurus.com. This is the 8th in a series of interviews with security gurus, and I'm super pleased to have with me today Guy Pajani. Welcome, Guy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Hey, Guy, do you mind sharing a few words about yourself?
Sure. So I'm the co-founder and president. I was CEO kind of the last summer, so have this loose title now, president of Sneak. Sneak is a kind of developer first security company. You know, I think we'll talk a little bit more about sort of developers and security, focusing on open source security, container security, and the likes. And further back in my career, I was a part of the kind of early AppSec pioneers in Sanctum, kind of building AppScan and AppShield, kind of first web app security products, which got acquired by WatchFire, which got acquired by IBM. Then I founded a web performance company that got acquired by Akamai, and I was CTO at Akamai for a bunch of years. The last step in that sort of journey really is co-founding Sneak.
Absolutely, so a ton of experience, and I would love to dive into two of these topics today, if you don't mind. Which is, first of all, yes, app scanning and developers, and moving from security to developers maybe. And the second one is your experience with countless startups as a founder, co-founder, coach, investor, and so on and so forth. So let's start with the beginning. So early on in your career, I think you had the opportunity to work for one of the best scanning solutions, which was AppScan. And the reason I say that is, so during that time I was at HP and we had Web Inspect, and the polite way of saying is you were stiff competition. The honest truth is you guys were really kicking our butt with that solution. The reality is today I feel that the buzz is kind of gone with these kind of tools. Where do you think did it go wrong with these tools in the last 10 years?
Yeah, I think there's been an evolution of ownership alongside the evolution of technology. So like Web Inspect, at the time, indeed, AppScan and Web Inspect were kind of the players, maybe a few smaller ones doing the sort of black box testing, and they primarily were an automated pen testers activity. And at the beginning, it was really all about automating the activity so you can reduce the cost of pen testing. After you even convinced people application security was an issue, because, at the beginning, you didn't even know how to tell them. I don't know if you know this, but actually AppScan was originally created as a sales tool. Really, the product of Sanctum of the company at the time was AppShield, which was a web app firewall. And when we kind of came to people and said, hey, you should buy this web application security protectors as well, but I don't have that problem. So AppScan was built to basically demonstrate really? To them that they have vulnerabilities, which, over time people sort of said, well, like this AppShield thing is scary. Can I just buy AppScan and, the rest is history. So it was very much it went from like protection to just like this automated pen test. And over the years, the appreciation for the fact that developers greatly outnumber security people and pen testers as a whole has grown. So people understood that there is a need, there's a desire to run these types of tests early on. Yeah. And from there, I think, a bunch of things happened. The sort of the term shift left came to be, the sort of the desire. I think I was saying this in like 2003, it's not a new term, mm-hmm. about moving it earlier in the cycle. The desire started there, but the tools were never really developer tools. Like the tools that were built back then were auditor tools. And when they were shifted left, all it meant was you invoked them in the build, right, in CI, which was massively nascent, right, or in the QA phase, in some of those cases. So it wasn't enough to drive adoption. And also, I think developers themselves were, it was still a period of time where it was very sequential and ownership was very kind of clear cut. You know, this is where I stop and you start. And so there wasn't as much inclination for developers to embrace it. And then on top of that, I would also say that the black box testing, you know, which today is called DAST, sort of, you know, dynamic application security testing, has I think it still hasn't found its way. It's not the most pipeline friendly technology. It requires a running system that you would, you know, hack, you know, you'd bash against. And you know, it's entirely doable to do it in a build surrounding, but it takes time, it takes effort. There's variance on it, and today, you know, still even fairly sophisticated scanners today, like Detectify or, you know, so like more forward thinking crawlers, even they struggle to actually run in the build, right? They may get invoked from the build. The only thing I think you see in the build from a black box testing perspective is things like OWASP Zap or like things that are more unit testing. But what has happened is, and you know, we can dig into those, is a creation of new technologies, you know, that do that type of security assessment with sort of static analysis and more recently SCA or sort of software composition analysis, finding vulnerable components, which are more pipeline friendly, as well as a change in the approach of how to kind of get developers to embrace them. So I think that's the rough kind of timeline, I would say.
Do you think it has anything to do with just being the stick? Because I remember from back in the day, there was very little to help the developer or to say, hey, this is how you remediate, or this is what you can actually do about this thing. It was very much, hey, you know what, we're going to do some pen test and here are some results and go fix it.
Yeah, I think the desire was there before. So if you look at AppScan, you know, we had, so it was Sanctum created AppScan, and then WatchFire bought Sanctum, and then IBM acquired WatchFire. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just a note, like IBM Rational acquired WatchFire. So IBM Rational, who was providing all the different developer tools, were the ones buying, you know, sort of the security company looking to build it in. So again, this is 2007. So the desire, you know, to sort of get developers to do it was already there. And we actually, like in AppScan, we did have a remediation tab. You know, we had, like, you could basically see the vulnerability view, or you can see the remediation view of saying, if you just fix this input validation problem on this parameter, then you'd fix all these different vulnerabilities. But I think it was usability was still poor for developers. So the information was sometimes better, sometimes worse. I still think we lacked a lot of things. But I think it was just too hard. You know, like in everything in life, probably there's how much you care and there's how hard it is, right? And you need to care more than it is hard.
Yeah.
And the reality was that the security industry, I think what we've really mostly done is we've really tried to sort of beat people. You're right, like the stick element, right? You try to make you care more by trying to scare you, by trying to, you know, demand it of you, threaten you. And in the world of, definitely in the world of DevOps or empowered developers, you know, that just doesn't work. Like, it's about builders, not breakers.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think you, the way to, we were trying to inch up how much you care in the wrong way, and we weren't making it easy enough. Like, we took an auditor type product that would just find issues, that would take too long to run, that would report, as you point out correctly, like its primary focus was around finding a problem versus guiding you to a fix. And we just sort of told developers, hey, here, you can use this now.
Yeah.
And I think one of the change that happened recently, and I think, like, we definitely do this at Sneak, and there's like inklings of this happening elsewhere, is to actually take the opposite approach and sort of say, hey, you know, this is really what we should be building is developer tools, and they should be tackling application security. And I think once you take that lens, you do things differently. Like, your goal is the same, which is, I want to identify and help fix a vulnerability, but the requirements, the knowledge around it, the way you interact with the product, definitely the way you celebrate successes and the likes, it just changes. It's night and day. So for a developer, the experience of picking up AppScan back then or picking up, you know, Snyk today is night and day. You know, it's just like there's no, there's really no comparing.
I think you're right. In this newer type companies like Snyk, like Secure Code Warrior and the likes, I think we acknowledge the rise of the developer, I can say, and we try to think about what the developer cares about, and we try to see, you know, how can we get ourselves in there to help the developer. With your experience, like, how do you think we can get the developer on our side, if I can use that, from a security perspective? How can we make him, not by the stick, but are there like initiatives that you can do in your organization to make security or developers more aware about security and rally around the security of the product?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a lot you can do. I mean, first of all, you have to acknowledge that you have to, you know, that there is really fundamentally, when you look at DevOps, you know, it moves us, like the new practice of development moves us towards autonomous teams. And autonomous teams are meant to be able to like take that code, and it doesn't matter, you know, if that means they have front end and back end expertise or the way they operate or the way they secure the software. They should be able to run quickly and create this tight loop from like creating a piece of value to getting it to the customer to learning and kind of adapting again. And so if you are not trying to empower developers to make these types of decisions without the security team organization, like the security org being involved, then you're basically going against the business. Like everybody else in your business is probably going to go faster, you know, and what you're doing is you're saying, no, we need to go slower. Mm-hmm. And that just never wins. So you have to, and I think like the modern development practices today make it a necessity. So you have to acknowledge that. And then from here, I think there are basically two angles of what you need to do. So for the developers, you need to make it easy. Like I would say, first and foremost, I think that every developer in the world, if it was the same efforts to build secure software and insecure software, they would choose to build secure software. So really, the delta is just how hard is it? So we're asking developers to do a ton. So really what you want is you want to make it easy, you know, easy if you can't even fun. So practices like, you know, allow developers, like give them the right information at the right time. I'm a fan of Git. Like I think in the Git integrations, Git is where code review happens. So if you integrate security controls into Git, they happen at the same time that other code review practices happen. So it's a natural place for a developer. You want to give application context. And when you describe a vulnerability, say you have a vulnerable component, you can say, hey, here are 500 components in your app. One of them is vulnerable, you know, go fish, right? Or you can say, hey, you're using library A, it uses library B, it uses library C, and C is vulnerable. So suddenly you give the developer the context of the thing they actually put into the code, which is A. There's a myriad of them, and you definitely want to also not just be a naysayer and celebrate successes and highlight, you know, from a security team's perspective, which actually is a good segue to the other set. So that's on developers. There's a lot there, but if I was to summarize, I'd say make it easy. Mm-hmm. Make it easy, and it'll happen. And the similar change, which is probably no smaller, needs to happen in security. And I like to say that it's not shift left, it's top to bottom that we need to do. It's like security team needs to go from being a controlling, you know, top-down type organization to being an enabler, yep. You know, that drives for bottom-up ownership, right? You have to allow developers to make those decisions. So security teams need to change their methodology. You know, they need to focus on how do they help developers successfully find issues and address them versus they themselves finding the issues, you know, and going back, right? Like I really don't care how easy it is at Snyk for a security person to run a scan. I care about how easy it is for a developer to do it, and I care how easy it is for a security person to govern, to sort of look, you know, across the board, but I don't care about how easy it is for them to run a scan. Similarly, the security team needs a whole bunch of other capabilities in their product. They need things like they need to relate developer activities to the different security posters that they lead to. They need to maybe partner. I really like Envision and a variety of others actually have a great pairing, similar to what finance and, you know, HR have done for many years. They pair an AppSec person with a certain set of dev teams, get the sort of the AppSec people to participate in stand-ups in dev. So switch to being more of an enabler, an empower, build tools, you know, help make it easy. You know, it's their job to basically make that easy for the developers.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think for a developer, security just has to be there when he needs it. Doesn't have to go outside of his current set of tools. You know, it just has to integrate what he's using on a day-to-day basis. And from a security perspective, they have to be enablers. Previously, they were the naysayers. They have to be the enablers and see, how can I get that in production faster? How can I help you on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just to say that, I think education is a big piece of this, right? When you think about developers, you know, they need to know what to do, and then it needs to be easy. So sometimes even the knowledge is embedded into the sort of the technology that's invoked, right? Like putting the right test in the build, you obviate the need to ask the question, you know, for the developer. But in many cases, they don't. So if you want to empower them to make good decisions, tooling is one aspect of it. And then kind of proper education, and, you know, platforms like Secure Code Warrior for self-serve education. I mean, all of those are really good. They all boil down to that sort of, you know, empowerment and ease of use, you know, for the developers to make the right decisions, because they're going to make security impacting decisions whether you like it or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? I think, like, with Secure Code Warrior, what we're doing is we make sure that if they tackle an issue, if there's an issue filed and it's a security issue, we want to be there and we want to guide them and give them help and try to make sure they understand the problem and find a solution on how to remediate the vulnerability and not make that same mistake twice. Maybe if you don't mind, I would like to shift gears a little bit and tackle the second topic. And as you've just mentioned, you know, you have a ton of startup experience. Being at Sanctum for less than 3 years in your journey of being acquired by WatchFire, less than 2 years being acquired by IBM, you jumped ship, started Blaze.io, and again within 2 years being acquired. And if I look at Snyk, it's 5 years old and it goes like a rocket ship. So we can all agree that you have a ton of experience. And I also somewhere read that you even help startups with some seed funding, with some advice. So my first question is, like, I know that Snyk needs your undiverted attention, but in all these other areas, where do you feel that, you know, in application security, where do you feel like, hey, there's still a need over here or over there? Is it maybe a company or an area of security that you're looking at that you find particularly interesting today?
Yeah, so I definitely love startups, you know, whether I'm founding them or I'm investing in them or I'm advising them or even just sort of, you know, seeing the journey. I find it's almost like it's the way to stay fresh, right? It's, you know, it's the opportunity for you, or sort of seeing someone else, you know, think outside the box and tackle a real pain point. I think, first of all, I would say, you know, security is a massive opportunity, you know, for many companies. I think it's a shift, you know, at least at the resolution of DevOps, which, you know, really led to multiple industries, disrupted some and created some. And so I think the same type of change is happening for security. And, you know, I see at a high level, and I've written about this, when you think about the pre-cloud and kind of post-cloud era, or in-cloud era, you know, pre-cloud applications were mostly code and libraries on top of a very hefty IT stack. Yep. You know, there was a centrally managed IT stack, and then it had some code and libraries, but your database, your network access, your VMs, your, like, everything was centrally managed, and you'd open a ticket, you know, your Oracle database. And in today's world, in the sort of the cloud world, and, you know, for many companies are in the transition, right? They have some in that old world and some in the new world. The same threats exist, the same security risks exist, but now they're a part of the application. So the same unpatched system, the same open port, the same unencrypted data, you know, like all these threats, they don't really care if you're in that old stack or new stack, but now these decisions are being made by developers. And so so there's one transition that I think in the market that's, you know, like Snyk is a part of it, but there's room for many, is that move from IT to AppSec. And I think there's a similar move from IT or sort of, you know, central administration into DevOps and into embedding security into that space. So a bit more specifically, areas that I think are really, really cool that I've been sort of tracking are asset management. You know, there's a big problem in DevOps. All of these are actually problems that are not just security, but security needs to be a part of that ride. So like this notion of knowing, you know, which entities, what's the unit, you know, that is moving around your system is a key DevOps problem, but then having a security perspective of, you know, what are the security attributes of it. Mm-hmm. I really like the thesis of security, or the concept of security chaos engineering. I think it's a powerful one. Security lacks a feedback loop today, yeah. You know, and while, you know, like ops lacks the feedback loop as well, but at least there are some outages and they're shorter, they're not that disastrous. You know, the number of outages, fortunately, is still far greater than the number of breaches. So, but even the number of outages weren't enough in DevOps to sort of learn from and to be the feedback cycle. So chaos engineering really gives them that predictability and kind of simulates failure. And security chaos engineering is a term that is relatively new, I think, in general and to me. And it basically talks about simulating security flaws and specific attacks. And I think it's very nascent, but I think it's an exciting space.
So it all comes down to security, but all going back to the developer, if I'm not mistaken, or do you disagree?
No, I do, but it's, you know, you have to remember the lens here, yeah. Right? It's you know, I kind of, you know, I live between kind of dev ops and, you know, and security, the whole DevSecOps space. But I think there's just a huge opportunity over there. There are other opportunities around two-factor authentication and kind of the remote working, clearly now in kind of COVID-19 era, and this notion of access. So, you know, it's already got the CASB, the sort of the cloud access. World is already some bigger players, you know, kind of in that space. But I think that necessity to factor authentication. And I have I've given a talk titled "The Developer is a Malware Distribution Vehicle," where I think there are two interesting security risks that come from developer empowerment. One is access to production.
Yeah.
Today developers, because they, you know, basically have responsibility that goes from code to production, oftentimes developers are much more, their machines are much more powerful. And if you manage that production access in a naive way, it means there's some SSH key sitting on the machine, you know, that on the developer's machine, on every developer's machine, oftentimes, that can just access production and start querying, like access some jump box and go from there. And that's scary. That's very, very scary. Same goes for like access to all sorts of web resources. So there are newer solutions. There's one called a Small Step, which is interesting. There's open source ones called Bless from Netflix and others. And you know, there's a variety of solutions to sort of help control developer access to production, which I talk about. And the other one that's interesting is the open source private source interaction. And there's actually an interesting cool company called Git Guardian that's in the space. But you know, we also talk to our customers, and they talk about that concern where they have private company artifacts like secrets being leaked to one of the developers' open source profile. And you know, just by mistake, but because it's the same individual, and because, you know, oftentimes it's the same interface, you know, their Git interface even that they work on, it's a fairly naive mistake. Yeah. And so the power of the developer is probably an area of concern, you know, over time for security as well.
And if you look into organizations, what are the key ingredients? What do you look at? Is it mainly people? Is it mainly the market? Is it mainly timing? Or some people say it's pure luck. Let's not discuss that one. There's always a factor of luck.
Yeah. You mean it, what makes a startup successful,
yes.
You mean?
Absolutely.
Well, I think so. I'm a big product go-to-market fit. I'm a believer in product go-to-market fit. So I think what happens is startups have, you know, some entrepreneur has a brilliant idea and hopefully even has the sort of, you know, the chops to actually build a product to do it. But then surrounding those people, there's all these desirable properties of a successful business, like being product-led, you know, being a SaaS business, being bottom-up, you know, all sorts of properties that people want to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so people end up lumping all sorts of properties, you know, from the go-to-market they wish they had to the product they have.
Yeah.
And in reality, I think oftentimes you need to adapt that product to the go-to-market or vice versa. So you have to really firmly ask, you know, is like, you know, for instance, if you want a freemium product, what is the actual use case that your freemium offering is solving? Like, you know, what is it? Is it something people would actually use for a long time on the free tier? Are you comfortable with them not paying you for that stretch of time? Or if not, it's a free trial. A free trial is a different go-to-market. It doesn't mean you're building a community and, you know, people would just funnel it. It means a trial, you know? It means suddenly your behavior to those people that register is very different. So that's just like one of many examples. You know, other questions are about channel, you know, what's the minimum deal size you should have, and who's your user versus buyer. So, which, you know, for Snyk, for instance, like a big focus was the fact that developer is the user, but more often than not, security is the buyer. And so that creates a different kind of go-to-market, different kind of business management. So, like, I think everything is hard in startups, you know, like you need a good idea, you need a good team, you need good technology, you need good timing. You know, I think you can time markets plus minus 2 years, you know, if you did it well.
Mm-hmm.
But that delta could be life and death for a startup, you know. But you have to match that product go to market.
It's keeping it real. It's keeping it real between what the market is that you want to capture and the product that you're building, and making sure there's a match.
And how you approach it, right? And how do you reach that market?
Maybe a final question. I once did an internship in Canada, in Ottawa, and I read through your profile, and you've actually spent 10 years over there. I actually didn't survive one winter. After 3 months, I gave up and I went back to Belgium. So what's the secret? How did you manage it to stick around in Ottawa for 10 years?
Yeah, I actually like Ottawa. I moved to Ottawa for a year. I couldn't place it on a map when I moved there.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, it's the capital of Canada. and it was this sort of quality of life type city. It's a city where people are genuinely nice, you know, because it's the capital. It has a good, you know, enough culture and things around it. You have to embrace the winter. My parents-in-law, when they flew in first time, they came from Israel. They literally got on the plane at plus 30 Celsius and got off the plane at minus 20 Celsius. And that was the last time they visited in winter. you know, they visited in summer again, but not in winter. But for us, it's all about experiences. I'm an experiences guy, and I embraced it. You can skate on the canal. You can go around. I think it's a little bit of a never say never, you know, on these places. That's it. Just when I said I'm going to settle in a little bit, and Ottawa seems good, and we bought a great house, an opportunity came to move to London, and lo and behold, you know, I've been 6 years now in London. So, you know, it's all about seizing opportunities.
Absolutely. So just to be sure, I liked Ottawa. It was a fun winter. So for all the people,
and it's a harsh winter.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
but it's fun.
It's a harsh winter.
It's fun. You can do like dog sledding and all that kind of stuff. So I really liked it. Guy, thank you very, very much for accepting being the 8th guru on the Software Security Gurus webcast. It was a fantastic chat. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for having me on. It was fun.
Thanks.
Software Security Gurus is sponsored by Secure Code Warrior, the secure coding company.